happens next between the U.S. and China? What opportunities are there and what pitfalls? As we move from the problems of Trump to the opportunities of Biden, among the incredible number of urgent items on his plate is China. Are there any good options for the new president? Can we focus on human rights while improving trade relations with China? What policies might serve us, and what might cause them to react aggressively? What is the risk of Biden looking like we're being pushed around by Beijing? With us today to discuss President Biden's China conundrum is Michael Clare, the Five College Professor Emeritus of Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College and a senior visiting fellow at the Arms Control Association. Michael Clare is the author of 15 books, the latest of which is All Hell Breaking Loose, The Pentagon's Perspective on Climate Change. And he writes regularly for Tom Dispatch and The Nation. Well, thanks for being with us, Michael. And you write that China is in a more powerful position than ever to dictate the rules of the world economy, and that on so many fronts, dealing with China poses an enormous conundrum for America's new leadership team. Why is that, and how severe is the challenge of managing U.S. relations with China?
Here we are at the start of a new administration that wants to, you know, change everything about American policy, and we face a foreign rival, China, that is more powerful than ever and poses challenges on multiple fronts for the United States, economically, militarily, diplomatically, technologically. I mean, let's face it, China is a rising power, and we haven't faced a challenger like this throughout American history. The Soviet Union was a powerful military threat, no question about it, and Russia retains the nuclear weapons from the Soviet era. But China has not only military might, but also economic and technological might that the Soviet Union and Russia do not possess. So this is a unprecedented challenge for the United States.
Oh, great. Just what a new president wants to hear. The imperial struggle for control of the far western Pacific has really been with us since the late 19th century. As you point out, the strategically important waterways of the western Pacific, such as the East and South China Seas, constitute China's very front door, so rightfully belong under Chinese control. For the United States, they represent the far western edge of its security zone, and so cannot be surrendered to Beijing. From this strategic impasse springs the very real possibility of minor incidents escalating into World War III. And you note that not since Japan's imperial expansion in the 1930s and early 40s has Washington faced such a formidable foe in that part of the world. And we all know how that turned out. Might the horse be already out of the barn for Biden?
Well, as you put it that way, yes. And we're talking about today or tomorrow, because the U.S. has deployed forces in these dangerous waterways, has been doing that under the Trump administration, very provocative naval and air maneuvers in the South China Sea and the waters around Taiwan. And it seems that the Biden administration is perpetuating these provocative naval and air maneuvers at this moment. Right now, the Theodore Roosevelt carrier strike group is in the South China Sea, an area claimed by China. At the same time, China is trying to send a signal to Biden that it intends to act tough in this area by sending its own forces into the South China Sea and sending air and naval forces around Taiwan. So you have a very dangerous mix at this very moment.
So it's not just COVID that could kill us. The Department of Defense has shifted away from terrorism being the main perceived threat to seeing long-term economic competition as the rising threat. And you point out that the entire military establishment has been substantially refocused and re-engineered from acting as a counter-terror and counter-insurgency force into one armed, equipped, and focused on fighting the Chinese and Russian militaries. If so, what does that box Biden in?
It seems to be that the current defense leadership is not backing away from that. General Lloyd Austin, who was sworn in as Secretary of Defense just a few days ago, has testified that he will continue along the path set by the Trump administration under its national security policy of viewing China as America's foremost threat to national security and in taking whatever military means are necessary to counter the Chinese threat. So there seems to be a continuation of the Trump policy under Biden.
Wow, that's very concerning. And I find it interesting that economic competition is the rising threat, whereas the terrorists, you know, from ISIS and Al-Qaeda, various different groups like that, they attacked physically Americans. And that's not happening here. How is it that, you know, economic competition is now the biggest threat? That seems sort of surprising.
Well, it's not just economic by itself. It's economic technological growth that China presents. Now, when I talk about this, I'm speaking how this is perceived by policy elites in Washington. I'm not speaking for myself, you understand.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, so China's growing economic and technological prowess is viewed as a military threat because they're able to invest more and more money in modernizing their armed forces, acquiring new technology, and building an armed forces that could challenge the United States. Also, the economic growth of China is giving China the opportunity to forge new relations with countries throughout Asia and beyond Asia,
yes,
in Africa,
absolutely,
and Latin America.
Yep.
So it's a geopolitical threat.
Yeah, geopolitical doesn't always lead to, you know, boom, you know, war and things like that, but oftentimes it does, unfortunately. And outgoing Secretary of Defense Mark Esper said he had three main strategic policies regarding China. Quote, the weaponization of advanced technologies, the strengthening of military ties with friendly nations surrounding China. In other words, the goal is to encircle China with hostile U.S.-oriented alliance, sending top-grade weapon systems to Taiwan, strengthening ties to India as well. And Secretary of State nominee Blinken praised Trump's approach, saying, as we look at China, there's no doubt it poses the most significant challenge to U.S. interests. And as you said, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin got not a lot of reaction when he was speaking at the Senate Armed Services Committee to what he claimed was his number one priority, to better equip U.S. forces to engage in a future war with China. He said, if confirmed, I will focus the Department of Defense on China. What does this say, perhaps, about the power of the military-industrial complex in the face of mounting pressure to cut the bloated defense budget pegged at $705 billion for the current year, excluding off-line items, in order to finance desperately needed investments in healthcare infrastructure, poverty reduction, and climate adaptation? So is this the military-industrial complex saying, hey, we got to find somebody to, you know, some enemy to keep us in power and keep the money rolling in?
Well, you know, if I were defense contractors and looking at the Biden list of priorities, he said his top priorities are climate change, coronavirus relief, economic relief at home, addressing institutionalized racism in this country, helping out the poor and addressing the economic effects of coronavirus. That's what he said are his top priorities, and rebuilding America's infrastructure. You don't hear in that list building up the military for going to war with China. So if you follow those that list of priorities, you would think that the natural outcome would be to take funds from the Defense Department and that huge budget of $705 billion for 2021 and say, couldn't we use some of that money to rebuild America's falling apart infrastructure and to make sure that everybody gets vaccinated for COVID and to redress some of the economic inequalities in America? That would be the natural reaction, it seems to me. Or at least, you know, if you see that through the eyes of these defense contractors, right. They must be thinking that. And so, you know, the natural outcome would be to say, to ring, the alarm bells, China, 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 China.
I wonder how much power they think they have over Biden. I mean, the weapons contractors have been living quite nicely, with us defining national security as they would like it in terms of weapons. But I would think national security could be defined a little bit differently, like real national security. But I wonder if the military-industrial complex believes it has as much power over Biden as they've had with most prior presidents. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, the truth of the matter is that the military-industrial complex has very successfully distributed a lot of its production into the districts of Democratic as well as Republican Congress people and senators. Right. It's distributed throughout the United States. So a lot of liberal members of Congress who might support Biden on a whole lot of issues also have large defense contractors in their states. Even in New England, which is, a largely blue area where I live in Massachusetts, and neighboring Rhode Island has major military facilities. Connecticut has huge military facilities. Maine has the biggest naval construction site, Bath Iron Works. So the Congress people in those states are largely beholden to the military-industrial complex and won't vote against military spending.
Yeah, we've seen that all too much. Our former member of Congress, Carol Shea Porter, was pretty liberal, but when it came to funding the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, which repairs nuclear submarines, oh no, we can't consider retrofitting and, you know, changing, making new jobs to build, say, high-speed railroad cars out of this stuff. No, we just got to go down the line with that. Yeah, it's been frustrating. The weapons contractors knew what they were doing when they placed their facilities all over the country, including in, obviously, Democratic areas. For those who may have just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive. We're talking about President Biden's China conundrum. Our guest is Professor Michael Clare, who's written about it a lot and who knows defense stuff. And I just saw this in the news very recently. The Biden administration has imposed a temporary freeze on U.S. arms sale to Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates. I'm rather pleased with that, but no doubt that is not going down well with the weapons lobby. Does this add pressure to China as the target, as, you know, the one that has to be in the headlines and in the news?
Well, those particular arms sales are on hold because of very successful activism by human rights groups. Yeah. Because in many cases, the weapons that we've been selling to Saudi Arabia have been used to attack, supposedly to attack the rebels, the Houthi rebels in Yemen. But we know very well that the Saudis have been bombing indiscriminately and in Yemen, with many, many civilians being killed, children included. So human rights groups have successfully mounted a campaign to convince legislators and the president to cut off arms sales to Saudi Arabia for that reason.
Sure.
So, you know, that's a good thing that's happened.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
I don't see a direct tie to China there, but plenty of other stuff is going to be come down the line that will be China-oriented.
Well, the weapons contractors, if they're not making these, you know, cool things for guidance systems and whatever for the Saudi Arabians, they got to sell their stuff somewhere, so might as well focus on China as a way to drum up a business. And you talked about human rights. The current government of China is highly authoritarian. Its record on human rights is not a good one. They have literal concentration camps for the Uyghurs in Western China, and people who care about human rights are appropriately making some noise about that. And it seems the suppression of civil liberties in Hong Kong is in its early, very frightening stages. We have to do something about this, no? I mean, how does Biden deal with this stuff?
I think that's absolutely true, that what the Xi Jinping regime has been doing with respect to the Uyghurs is utterly reprehensible, and the crackdown on civil liberties in Hong Kong equally so. And I think it's appropriate for the Biden administration to raise this with Chinese leaders and express our outrage over that, and to take steps, for example, to punish companies, including American companies, that have contributed to the surveillance and targeting of Uyghurs. It appears that some American companies, and as along with Chinese and other companies, have supplied technology, the facial recognition technology used to identify Uyghurs, then targeted them for arrest and incarceration, like you say. So I think it's absolutely appropriate to impose sanctions on those companies and otherwise punish China for those activities. But that doesn't mean that we can't take steps to cooperate with China in other areas like climate change that are essential to our well-being.
Have they indicated that they're interested in cooperating with regard to climate change? Because they've apparently been, you know, a big polluter. Are they interested in working with us on that? Any indications?
Absolutely. You know, China is now taking the lead in the international community in talking about taking steps to reduce its own carbon emissions and to work with other states to do that. Now, how much of this is propaganda and how much of it's real has to be tested. Yeah. But the only way you could do that is by engaging with them in diplomacy. And that's what John Kerry's job is. He will be the country's climate envoy. And he has expressed a strong desire to meet with Chinese officials on this issue and to press them for more information, but also to find areas where there could be cooperation between the two countries.
Oh, interesting. That's good to hear. Plus, he does have a little bit of experience with former Secretary of State, and he did quite well with that, I thought. And since, as you say, Democrats as well as Republicans view China as a potent economic rival that could, in the very near future, overtake the U.S. to become the world's leading economic power. So aren't there options other than aggressive, militarized confrontation that might be more effective tools for the job? And do you think the Biden administration will pick up the right tools here?
There certainly are. Of course, there are other options for dealing with a country like China. There are all kinds of means of engagement. During the Obama administration, there was something called strategic or economic and security strategic talks. Uh-huh. I'm forgetting the exact title, but there were periodic periodic dialogues between senior U.S. officials, the Secretary of the Treasury, the head of the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State would meet on a regular schedule with their Chinese counterparts, and they set up working groups of Chinese and American officials to look for areas of cooperation, and a lot came from that. There were exchanges, university to university exchanges on electric cars, for example, that sort of thing. So this is entirely possible.
So sort of
involving civil society as well, not just government, but corporations and universities, think tanks, and the like.
So sort of a constructive engagement, as Al Gore used to talk about. And I wonder about any kind of fear. I know the right wing has already started saying that, oh, China owns Biden. He's gonna look like a puppet to the Chinese, to Xi Jinping. What about concern about that? I mean, I guess you can't just blow these right wingers off, but I wonder how much of a consideration that might be for the Biden administration.
I'm sure they've given a lot of thought, but you know, after all, it was Donald Trump who talked about Xi Jinping as his friend. You haven't heard language like that from the Biden administration. They see China appropriately as a rival, a competitor, which it is.
Yeah.
But you can't wish a competitor away. You have to engage with rivals and competitors, and you want to do it in a way that doesn't result in World War III, which is the other possible outcome.
Well, that would be quicker than COVID. Ooh, sorry about that. But we've already lost 400 and some thousand lives here in America. Anyway, the 45th president imposed a series of tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars of Chinese imports. I wonder how that has worked out. What do you know about that? I mean, has that helped American manufacturers and farms or hurt us?
You know, the final word isn't in on that.
Uh-huh.
My understanding from reading the business pages of the media is that some companies benefited, some steel manufacturers in this country benefited, but probably more areas of the economy suffered than benefited.
Yeah.
Certainly farmers suffered considerably, and a lot of other companies that rely on Chinese imports suffered a lot, and American consumers certainly suffered because of higher prices. So on balance, it probably hurt American consumers more than achieved any benefits.
Well, a lot of us are impressed with President Biden, more so than we expected to be, quite frankly. I wonder, you know, he's doing so many good things, I think. I wonder about any kind of break between the good things he's doing domestically and potential problems with foreign policies. I wonder about how appropriate it would be to be optimistic with regard to how Biden is going to deal with China. Or is it really, as you say, a big conundrum for him?
Well, I'm pessimistic on this front.
Uh-huh.
I worry that because he wants to make progress on the domestic front, he's going to allow hawks, the China hawks, to have their way with China to cover his rear, you know? And that's why I and some colleagues have formed a new organization called the Committee for a Sane U.S.-China Policy. And your listeners can visit our website, Sane U.S.-China Policy, to see how we view this issue. And we propose sensible, peaceful, mutually beneficial solutions to some of the questions you're raising, because we do worry that Biden is going to allow China policy to slip out of his fingers and turn around and stab him in the back.
Mm. The website, so if people just Google sane U.S. China policy, that'll take them there?
Yep.
Thank you so much, Michael. Let's hope, I'm impressed by Biden so far, and let's hope enough, a lot of pressure is going to be needed, and you can't fix everything right away. I know Americans are like, we want instant solutions to everything, but it doesn't work like that. And if we keep up some pressure and let him know that people care about avoiding World War III, we can do that. Again, the sane U.S.-China policy.
Michael.org.
ORG.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us on Keeping Democracy Alive. We'll be in touch again, I'm sure.
It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. And now a little bit of current Chinese rock and roll.
No man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours.
every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win a war individually. It take the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours.
Dr. Zom Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con ánimo.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is an encore edition of the Children's Hour.